ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्ण। वेलकम टू भागवत प्रवाह ऑनलाइन सीरीज ऑन द 12th कैंटो ऑफ श्रीमद् भागवतम। इन द फर्स्ट एपिसोड ऑफ द 12th कैंटो वी हैव सीन द क्वालिटीज ऑफ कलियुगा पीपल एंड वी हैव ऑल्सो सीन द degraded dynasties of Kaliyuga, and we have seen some prominent names of people who are appearing, who would be appearing in the Kaliyuga. And Sukadeva Goswami also describes the incarnation of the Supreme Lord in the form of Kalki, who appears at the end of Kaliyuga and then kills all miscreants and brings about a transformation in the hearts of people, and thus begins the next Yuga, which is Satyayuga. It is Lord Kalki who brings a transformation between Kali Yuga and the next Satyayuga. So after that, we have seen Bhumi Gita. Bhumi Gita is the lamentation of Mother Earth. She was lamenting for the unfortunate situation of the earthly kings who were so possessive about Mother Earth, and then they were thinking themselves to the proprietors or kings of land everywhere. So she was lamenting, and her lamentation is called Bhumi Gita, the song of Mother Earth. And later we have seen the four types of pralaya or destruction. So the first type of pralaya is the naimittika pralaya or occasional annihilation that happens at the end of the day of Brahma. At the end of the day of Brahma, all the planetary systems within one universe are merged into the body of Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu. That is called occasional annihilation. And the next type of annihilation is called prakritika pralaya or elemental annihilation, where the entire universe merges within Mahavishnu's body. So the third type of pralaya is atyantika pralaya or ultimate destruction, which happens when the false ego of the living entity is destroyed. So this is also called liberation. And the fourth type of annihilation is nitya pralaya. At every moment, constantly, something is getting deteriorated. Means all the material objects are subject to constant deterioration or destruction. So these are the four types of pralayas that we have seen in the fourth chapter. And the fifth chapter describes the final instructions of Sukadeva Goswami to Parikshit Maharaj. And the sixth chapter describes how Sukadeva Goswami absorbed his mind in the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, and he was bitten by this snake bird Takshaka, and Parikshit Maharaj departs from this world. He goes to the spiritual world. So we have seen up to this point. So we have covered up to the middle of sixth chapter. So we will begin from where we left in the sixth chapter. So the sages of Naimisharanya asked Suta Goswami, "My dear Suta Goswami, after the departure of Parikshit Maharaj, Parikshit Maharaj's son Janamejaya conducted a sacrifice to kill all the snakes in this universe. So then we have discussed yesterday that Brihaspati came and stopped Janamejaya from doing that sacrifice. So the sages of Naimisharanya were a bit bewildered or confused and asked Suta Goswami, "My dear Suta Goswami, how could such an exalted person like Janamejaya be subjected to such emotional outburst or anger that he wanted to kill all the serpents in the universe?" Then Suta Goswami said that it is the power of the Supreme Lord's Maya that makes even learned people or advanced people also subject to some anger or other frailties. So the Supreme Lord's Maya is so powerful. We have seen in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam also. Vadanti vishvam kavayas manashvaram pashyanti chadhyatma vidho vipashchitaha tathapi muhyanti tava jamayaya suvismitam krutyamajam natosmitam vadanti vishvam kavayasmanasvaram. So in this shloka, it is described that even if a person is very learned and advanced and have practiced spiritual life to a considerable extent, and he understands the temporary nature of this material world, and he can even convince and preach others also that this material world is very temporary in nature, even such exalted people also could be bewildered by Maya of the Lord. Suvismitam krityamajam natosmitam. They can be thoroughly bewildered or confused in their understanding because of their inattentiveness in that exalted position. So one has to be attentive in the practice of one's spiritual life, moment by moment. Even little inattention could cause great havoc in one's spiritual life. So coming to this case of Janamejaya, Suta Goswami describes that the illusory energy of Lord Vishnu is unstoppable and very difficult to perceive. So that's why even sometimes exalted people also could sometimes be bewildered. But the good quality of devotees is, although circumstantially they might do some mistakes, but they have the humility to align themselves with the advice of another exalted devotee. So we need to understand that when Brihaspati came and gave a good advice to Janamejaya, he immediately stopped the sacrifice. So sometimes out of certain emotions or some past impressions or some other circumstantial reasons, a devotee might do some mistake, but another devotee comes and saves him by giving good advice, and the humble devotee will accept that advice and restrain from that misbehavior anymore. So then Suta Goswami, after giving this explanation, he offers a prayer to the Supreme Lord in the 35th shloka.
Namo bhagavate tasmai krishnaya kunthamedhase yat padamburuhadhyanat samhitam adhyagam imam. Namo bhagavate tasmai, I offer obeisances unto that Bhagavan, Supreme Lord Krishna, yat padamburuhadhyanat, by meditating on the Supreme Lord's lotus feet, samhitam adhyagam imam. So I have been able to study these samhitas, means the scriptures. So Suta Goswami has studied all the scriptures under bona fide gurus, and he has personally heard the Srimad Bhagavata Mahapurana from Sukadeva Goswami directly. Some people might say Sukadeva Goswami began to speak from the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. His entrance is described in the last chapter of first canto, and he began speaking from second canto. In the sixth chapter, Sukadeva Goswami left. So, no, Sukadeva Goswami was speaking only up to the fifth chapter of 12th canto. So, what happens to the initial part? In the first canto, Sukadeva Goswami did not speak. In the 12th canto, last half, second half, Sukadeva Goswami did not speak. So, are they parts of Srimad Bhagavatam? So, they are parts of Srimad Bhagavatam, although Sukadeva Goswami has not spoken in the later chapters. So, now even in Bhagavad Gita also, there are 700 shlokas. Krishna did not speak all the 700 shlokas. So there were shlokas spoken by Sanjaya and Arjuna, and the first shloka was spoken by Dhritarashtra. But entire 700 verses of Bhagavad Gita can be called as Bhagavad Gita. So there is some prelude required in the scripture. So entire scripture is considered Srimad Bhagavatam, and Sukadeva Goswami is the eternal immortal speaker of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and Vyasadeva is the writer of Srimad Bhagavatam. So Suta Goswami is explaining, he is offering obeisances unto the Lord, saying that because of his mercy only I have been able to read all these samhitas, means scriptures. So when the sages of Naimisharanya heard about samhitas, they said that we want to know about the samhitas. So can you please narrate to us how the intelligent disciples of Vyasadeva, Krishna Dvaipayana Vyasa, spoke and edited the Vedas. We have heard that Vyasadeva has edited the Vedas. So in the fourth chapter of the first canto, we have seen that Vyasadeva has divided one Veda into four, and later he entrusted these four Vedas to his four disciples, and then they further divided them into subsections, and they propagated the knowledge of Vedas. So now the sages of Naimisharanya are again asking about this Vedic division done by Vyasadeva and his disciples and grand disciples. So now Suta Goswami begins to answer the questions of the Shaunakadi rishis at Naimisharanya. He says that first this nada appeared, means the sound in this universe. First element that manifested is the sound vibration from the heart of Brahma. So by worshipping the subtle form of the Vedas, mystic sages cleanse their hearts. What is that? That is Omkara. So the transcendental sound vibration of Om. So that has A, U, and Ma. So these are the sub elements of this Omkara. So these are the sounds with which this Omkara is composed of. So that is the sound representation of the Supreme Lord. So that emanated first. So from Omkara, Lord Brahma has created alphabetical sounds, and then he created the Vedas. So the four Vedas. So when Brahmaji spoke these Vedas, as you can see in that picture, so Brahmaji has four mouths. So from his four mouths, he is speaking four Vedas, and all the Vedic mantras manifested from the four heads of Brahma, and they were like a pile of colorful stones, yellow stones, blue stones, and green stones, or red stones. So like that, they are pile of very, very precious gems. So then Krishna Dvaipayana Vyasa understood that, so these Vedas must be divided into different sections. Otherwise, common people won't be able to understand. So at the end of Dwapara Yuga, so this Vedas are edited by our Vyasadeva. So while all these four Vedic mantras, the mantras of all the four Vedas are like pile of colorful stones, as you see in that picture, Vyasadeva has divided them into different sections. He made all the yellow stones separate, all the red stones separate, all the blue stones separate, and all the green gems separate. So like that, he separated them. So he separated the Vedic mantras and divided one Veda into four. And later, Vyasadeva has entrusted these four Samhitas or Vedas to his disciples. So he entrusted Rig Veda, that has Bahuvrcha mantras, to Paila Rishi. And he entrusted Yajur Veda to Vaishampayana Rishi. And he entrusted Sama Veda to Jaimini Rishi. And he entrusted Atharva Veda to Samantu. So you can see that big chart, so where the Vedic division is mentioned. So this is made from the 6th chapter and the 7th chapter. So Krishna Dvaipayana has given Rig Veda to Paila, and Atharva Veda to Sumantu, and Yajur Veda to Vaisampayana Rishi, and Sama Veda to Jaimini Rishi. And he has also entrusted the Puranas to Roma Harshana. So this is how he entrusted whatever he has written to his disciples. And these disciples further divided these Veda mantras into smaller sections. And then through their own disciples, they propagated this knowledge of Vedas. So in this way, through the disciples of Vyasadeva and the grand disciples of Vyasadeva, this Vedic knowledge is propagated. So Vedic knowledge is preserved by propagating the knowledge. Preservation happens by propagation. So in this way, Sukadeva Goswami, Suta Goswami has learnt all the Vedas, all the Puranas through this lineage coming from Vyasadeva. So then, after describing the Vedic division, our Suta Goswami describes about Puranic divisions, Puranic literatures. So a Mahapurana or a great Purana has 10 kinds of characteristics. So there are some lesser Puranas that discuss 5 topics. There are great Puranas that discuss 10 topics. So in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam also, we have seen that Srimad Bhagavatam is a Mahapurana that shines with 10 kinds of topics. So in this 7th chapter of 12th canto also, Suta Goswami describes these 10 topics. Atra sargo visargascha sthanam poshana mutayah manvantaresha nukatha nirodho mukti rashrayah. Sarga means the primary creation done by the Supreme Lord himself. Next, visarga means the secondary creation done by Lord Brahma and his sons. Third, sthanam means the positioning of living entities in various planetary systems according to their own qualities. So that creation of planetary systems is a part of the maintenance of this material world, and that is called sthanam, that is also called vritti in the 12th canto. And fourth topic of Srimad Bhagavatam is poshana. Poshana means protection offered by the Supreme Lord to his devotees, even if sometimes devotees happen to do some mistakes circumstantially, accidentally. So that is also called raksha. Poshanam is also called raksha. And Uti, fifth topic is called Uti, that means impetus, or inclination to perform activities, good or bad, auspicious or inauspicious, pious or impious. So that Uti is described in the 7th canto predominantly. Then 6th topic is called Manvantara, which is the change of Manus. Within one day of Brahma, there are 14 Manus. One day of Brahma has 1000 Divyugas, and there are 14 Manus who rule for about 71 to 72 Divyugas each during this one day of Brahma. And the reigns of this Manus is called Manvantara. They are described predominantly in the 8th canto of Bhagavatam. The 7th topic of Srimad Bhagavatam or Mahapurana is Ishanu Katha, which is also called Vamshanu Charitam. So this is the science of God. So Ishanu Katha means science of God, and also the stories of the devotees of the Supreme Lord. So that is called Ishanu Katha. So in the 9th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Ishanu Katha is described through the topics of Sun Dynasty and Moon Dynasty. Then Nirodha means this annihilation, which is also called Samstaha. So we have seen 4 types of annihilation in the previous episode only, in the 12th canto. The 9th topic is called Mukti, liberation, which is described in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam. And Mukti is also called Hetu. And final topic, 10th topic is called Ashraya, which is the Samam Bonam or the supreme shelter, that is Supreme Lord Krishna, who is described very elaborately in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. All these 10 topics are described in all the 12 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, but with various degrees of emphasis. By a careful observation, we can see that some cantos emphasize on some topics more than the other topics. So we have seen all that in the previous episode. So there are 18 Puranas like this. So these Puranas are also categorized into Sattvaguna Puranas, then Rajasic Puranas and Tamasic Puranas. Means these Puranas are meant for people in those modes. So you can see the 18 Puranas: Bhagavata Purana, Vishnu Purana, Padma Purana, Narada Purana, Garuda Purana, Varaha Purana. So these 6 are the Sattvika Puranas. Then Vamana Purana, then Markandeya, Brahma, Bhavishya, Brahmavaivarta Purana, Brahmanda Purana. They're all Rajasic, considered Rajasic. Then Matsya, Kurma, Linga, Skanda, Agni and Shiva Puranas, they are meant to cater to the needs of people who are predominantly in the mode of ignorance. So like that, there are 18 Puranas. And Bhagavata Purana, although it appears as a part of Sattva Guna Puranas, but Bhagavatam is transcendental and it is beyond modes. So because Vyasadeva has written Bhagavatam in a certain way to cater to the needs of people who are in mode of goodness, but Narada Muni came in the 1st canto, 5th chapter, and inspired Vyasadeva to write Srimad Bhagavatam in such a way that it satisfies the hankerings of learned people and it also mitigates the sufferings of common people. So thus, Srimad Bhagavatam is revised and edited by Vyasadeva in such a way that the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna and his Bhakti Yoga and the stories of his devotees are repeatedly and elaborately described in Srimad Bhagavatam. This Bhagavatam is transcendental to the material modes. So one who listens to the narration of these expansions of Vedas and the whole Puranic division done by Vyasadeva and his disciples and grand disciples will increase in spiritual strength. So hearing Puranas and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam especially is very purifying. Hearing about the Vedic division and the writing of these Puranas done by Vyasadeva, that also is very purifying. That completes the 7th chapter. Now we will enter the 8th chapter. So, in the 8th chapter, Shaunaka Rishi asks Suta Goswami about an exalted devotee named Markandeya Rishi. So, he has heard that Markandeya Rishi was the son of Mrkandu Muni and he survived during the annihilation of this universe. So, in the 4th chapter of 12th canto, Sukadeva Goswami described the 4 kinds of pralaya: Atyantika pralaya, Nitya pralaya, Naimittika pralaya and Prakritika pralaya. We have discussed that. So now the sages of Naimisharanya had this question: this Markandeya Rishi has survived during the phase of annihilation of this entire universe. So how did this happen? So we want to know more about him. And he, at the end of the Brahma's day, which is called at the end of Brahma's day, there is an annihilation which is called Naimittika Pralaya, and during that Naimittika Pralaya, the planetary systems are merged within this ocean of inundation. But Markandeya Muni survived, while all the living entities will drown there and will go into a state of unconsciousness. But Markandeya Rishi survived throughout this annihilation period for thousands and thousands of years. So we want to know more about him. And he has also seen an infant baby in this waters of annihilation. You can see that small child Krishna is just sucking his toe while sleeping on a banyan leaf. And that darshan was available to Markandeya Rishi during the annihilation period. So these topics were heard by Saunaka Rishi, and now he is asking our Suta Goswami to elaborate on these topics. So Suta Goswami began describing. He says that Markandeya Rishi is a very exalted sage, and he underwent so many purificatory rituals, and he is a celibate, he is a brahmachari, he is lifelong celibate, and he is endowed with austerity and Vedic knowledge. He is a very learned person, he is a great devotee of the Lord also. He is a simple brahmachari, he worshipped the Supreme Lord in various ways, and he would eat only when his guru permits him to eat. So in this way Markandeya Rishi performed various sacrifices, and also Markandeya Rishi lived for 6 Manvantaras. So although he appeared in the beginning of the creation only, he lived for 6 Manvantaras, and in 7th Manvantara also he was meditating on the Supreme Lord and doing his austerities. Then in the 7th Manvantara, Indra became afraid, he became very insecure. Whenever some sage is doing some austerities, Indra would feel insecure. So to distract Markandeya Rishi from his austerities and meditation and tapasya, Indra has sent the Cupid. Cupid is Madana or Kamadeva, who induces lust in materialistic people. So he had sent this Cupid along with so many apsaras, and also along with two personalities, greed and intoxication personified. You can see in that picture. So two black colored people who are wearing black dress, they are also there along with this Cupid and other apsaras. So they all were sent by Indra to distract Markandeya Rishi from his austerities. Indra does this sometimes. So once in the 4th canto also we have discussed, once a Rishi named Kandu was doing his austerities and Indra became very insecure, and he had sent a apsara named Pramlocha. Then Pramlocha distracted Kandu from his austerities, and as when they united, Marisha was born, and that Marisha was married by Prachetas. We have seen that in the 4th canto. So now Cupid came along with so many apsaras, along with greed and intoxication personified, to distract Markandeya Rishi from his tapasya. Earlier also in the 11th canto we have seen Cupid has come along with so many ladies to distract Naranarayana Rishis from their tapasya. But Naranarayana Rishis, they humbled Cupid thoroughly, and Naranarayana Rishi, he has created so many apsaras and gave Urvasi as a gift to Cupid. You take her to the heavenly planets. So Naranarayana Rishis are so exalted, their incarnations of the Supreme Lord. So they were not distracted by Cupid. And now this Markandeya Rishi was a devotee of Naranarayana Rishi. He worshipped Naranarayana Rishi, and this devotee being empowered by the Supreme Lord, being so devoted to Naranarayana Rishi, he is also not distracted. So Markandeya Rishi's hermitage is described by Suta Goswami in this context. He says that Markandeya Rishi used to live in a place where so many brahmanas used to live, and his hermitage is surrounded by so many groves of pious plants and very sacred ponds. There are buzzing bees, there are cooing cuckoos and dancing peacocks, and so many other birds and animals in mode of goodness they surrounded. Like that, there are some birds like swans and parrots, they are all into mode of goodness. There are some crows and owls, they are into mode of ignorance. So birds and trees are also in multiple modes. So there are trees that don't give flowers and fruits, they are mainly into mode of ignorance many times. And there are some very pious trees that can give shade and flowers and fruits and firewood to the humanity, they are in mode of goodness. So sages used to live in places where mode of goodness is predominant. The place is surrounded by very good trees and water bodies and animals and birds. So now it was the springtime. The ambience is very good, and it was the springtime. The evening sky was there with rising moon, and sprouts and fresh blossoms and creepers were there in the surroundings. So at that time, Cupid came along with his apsaras. So Suta Goswami gives a brief description of how Cupid, along with the apsaras, tried to induce this Markandeya Rishi to get distracted from his austerities. So, but especially there is one apsara named Punjakasthali. So she tried to distract Markandeya Rishi a lot, but Markandeya Rishi was closed. He closed his eyes and he was doing meditation. He was not at all deviated from his meditation, although these people tried a lot. So their attempt was like some small children trying to disturb a sleeping snake, and they failed. So a snake is sleeping, a python is sleeping, and the children will go and try to distract, and the children themselves will get bewildered when the snake gets up, something like that. So now this Cupid and all the other apsaras, they could not distract Markandeya Rishi in any way, and Indra was totally astonished. And although Markandeya Rishi was so self-controlled, still he did not have any false ego. So sometimes we may have a lot of self-control, mind control or sense control. We may accomplish certain things without any distraction. We are so determined to do certain things, but that could induce some false ego in us. Oh, I have become so great. That could induce some pride or false prestige in us. But Markandeya Rishi, although he is so self-controlled, he did not have any false ego. Although he defeated Cupid, although he defeated all the apsaras, he defeated greed and intoxication personified, but he was not at all proud. He did not have any false ego. And Indra was totally astonished seeing this Markandeya Rishi. Being very pleased with the austerities and devotion and self-control of Markandeya Rishi, Naranarayan Rishis came in front of Markandeya Rishi to give darshan. So these two, Naranarayan Rishis, were twins. They were born together, and one is in blackish form, one is in whitish form, and their forms are beautifully described in the shlokas. So tau shukla krishnau navakanjalochanau chaturbhujau rauravavalkalambarau pavitra pani upavitakam trivrit kamandalam dandam rujam cha vainavam. So tau shukla krishnau navakanjalochanau, their complexions were Shukla and Krishna. One is whitish, one is bluish. Shukla Krishna, blackish. Shukla Krishna, Navakanja Lochanav. Their eyes were like lotus petals. They were looking so beautiful. Chatur Bhujau, Naranarayan Rishis have four hands each. Although they were sages, but still they had four hands. Chatur Bhujau, Raurava Valkalambaro. And they are also having Valkalambara, means their hairs were like knotted. Pavitra Pani, Upavitakam, Trivrit. And they are also wearing this Brahman threads. And Kamandalam Dandam Rujamcha Vainavam. They were holding this Kamandala and Danda, Sanyas rod, Sanyasa staff and Kamandala. They are not coming, although they are coming with four hands, they were not holding Shankachakra Gadapadma. They were not with crowns and peacock feathers like that. So they were dressed like sages. They were holding Sanyasa rod and Kamandalu. You can see the picture. It's a very accurate depiction of the shlokas. Padmakshamalam utajantu marjanam vedam cha sakshat tapa eva rupinau tapattaditvarna pishangarochisham pramsudadhanau vibudharsha bharchitau. So in hands they were holding water pot and all, and they were bearing tall and yellow effulgence like radiant lightning. And they appeared like austerity personified. They were being worshipped by great devatas also. In this way, Naranarayan Rishis gave their darshan to Markandeya Rishi. Then Markandeya Rishi fell flat at their lotus feet. He offered obeisances to them. He bowed down in front of them. And he offered humble obeisances, and he started addressing. He started offering prayers to Naranarayan Rishis. He says that you awaken everyone's consciousness, and you are the intimate friend of all devotees. Your forms bestow ultimate benefit to the entire humanity,
and your shelter saves us from the contamination of material energy, and including Brahma, everyone fears time, and your lotus feet can give liberation from this influence of time. So nayatra kalaha prabhavet parah prabho, because the Lord is never influenced by time factor, so he can protect us from being affected by this time factor. And so I worship your lotus feet. You are like a spider, just like spider who spins and later withdraws its web. Similarly, the Lord manifests this material creation and then winds up that material creation also after some time. So the Lord accepts three modes and employ goodness to liberate the jivas. So in this way, Markandeya Rishi glorified Naranarayan Rishis in various ways, and he says that the Vedic scriptures reveal your real personality. Just by some empirical methods or mental speculation, which are quite confusing sometimes, so by these methods you cannot attain, no one can attain you. So you can be attained only by your bhakti yoga. So I worship that Supreme Lord who is beyond all this bodily identification. In this way, Naranarayan Rishis were glorified by Markandeya Rishi so wonderfully. And that completes the 8th chapter. Now we will enter the 9th chapter. So in the 9th chapter, Naranarayan Rishi is being impressed with the prayers offered by Markandeya Rishi. They start replying. First, Narayana Rishi spoke. He said that, "Oh Markandeya Rishi, you are best of all Brahmanas. Since 6 Manvantaras, Markandeya Rishi was doing austerities with full self-control and mind control. And Markandeya Rishi was not at all distracted even by Cupid also, even by great Apsaras also, even by greed and intoxication personified also. They could not deviate him from his austerities. So you have perfected your spiritual practices. We are satisfied with your practice of lifelong celibacy. So you can ask any benediction that you want from us. We are ready to bestow any benediction that you want." Then Markandeya Rishi again glorified Naranarayan Rishis, and he says in the 4th shloka, "Jitam te deva devesha prapanna arti harachyuta varenai tavata lamno yad bhavan samadrishyata." You remove the distress of all surrendered devotees, and your darshan is the benediction that I desire. Now I received your darshan, I don't feel like taking any other benediction, but still I have one small desire. O Lord, even demigods like Brahma, Indra, Chandra, Varuna, Vayu, etc. also achieve their positions only by serving your lotus feet. I have one small desire. I wish to see how your illusory potency works. What is the function of your maya? Your maya is known to bewilder so many living entities, these materialistic people, conditioned souls in this world. So I want to know how this maya functions. How does your maya function? So Naranarayan Rishis did not very much appreciate this kind of desire in the heart of Markandeya Rishi. So Markandeya Rishi is such a elevated, exalted, celibate brahmachari. He is so renounced, but he had this desire to understand the functioning of maya. So Markandeya Rishi wanted to see how maya functions, not to enjoy maya, but he just wants to understand. Out of his curiosity he asked. Sometimes one may not be having any interest to eat some object. So he may be having, he is detached. He is not attached to filling his belly or satisfying his tongue with palatable dishes, which are there, 50 items may be there in the menu. Although he has no desire to eat, sometimes he is a little curious to see what is there in the menu. He just wants to check out. "I just want to see. I just want to know the items. I don't want to eat." So Markandeya Rishi is also like that. He did not have any desire to enjoy maya. He did not want to enjoy in a material plane under the influence of the material energy of the Lord. He just wants to understand how maya functions and how maya bewilders the living entities. So, but this kind of curiosity is not very much appreciated, because sometimes out of curiosity we may want to explore something. And while exploring that something out of curiosity, we could get distracted by it or attracted by it, and we could be deviated from our original path also. That's why complete disinterest in maya or the external energy of the Lord should be there for an exalted devotee, for an advancing devotee. But sometimes devotees may become curious. The Lord will satisfy that curiosity also, but that curiosity has to be given up eventually. So the Lord said, fine, so be it. You can see how Maya bewilders all the living entities. And then they departed. They went to Badrikashram. Naranayana Rishi stayed in Badrikashram. So then Markanda Rishi was thinking, these sages, Naranayana Rishi told that they will reveal to me how material energy bewilders the living entities, but they disappeared. So he was thinking about his desire, how will my desire be fulfilled? And then he remained at his ashram only, meditating on the Lord and the fire and sun and doing his regular austerities. And sometimes, due to great love for the Lord, Markandeya Rishi could even forget to follow certain rules and regulations of his worship. See, he is such an exalted person, but still he had this curiosity to understand how Maya of the Lord functions. So Markandeya Rishi continued to perform his worship, staying at his ashram, his hermitage. Then suddenly, he saw that winds and clouds and lightning appeared in the sky. And then immediately, within no time, he found that flood waters are inundating his ashram. And then within no time, he found himself drowning in that floods. He was trying to swim in those floods. And everywhere he was seeing only water only. There is rain, there are clouds, there is lightning, there are floods. Entire universe is inundated completely. He was troubled by hunger. Markandeya Rishi was trying to swim in those inundation waters. He was troubled by hunger and thirst, and oceanic animals were there. Wind was blowing, and he was aimlessly swimming, aimlessly wandering in the waters of inundation, and he could not see the shore. So he was very tired, and whirlpools were there, waves were there, aquatic monsters were there, and millions of years passed like this as Markandeya Rishi was traveling in this inundation waters, gasping for his breath. He was totally bewildered. He was completely confused. Millions of years passed. It's not a small duration. So one night, the duration of one night of Brahma is equivalent to the duration of one day of Brahma, which is 1,000 Divya Yugas, 1,000 Chatur Yugas, means 14 Manvantaras. So for that much of time, Markandeya Rishi was doing this. Then Markandeya Rishi was in the waters of inundation. Within no time, this has happened. And then as he was swimming, he found a banyan tree out of nowhere in the middle of the waters. And on that banyan tree, there is a beautiful banyan leaf. On top of that leaf, a beautiful bluish infant baby was sleeping. And then he was sucking his own toe. That is the Vatapatra Shai. And his form is beautifully described in this chapter. Mahamarakatashyamam Shrimadvadana Pankajam Kambhugrivam Mahoraskam Sunasam Sundarabhruvam Swasajat Alakabhatam Kambhu Sri Karana Dandibam Vidrumadhara Bhasheshat Sonyayita Sudhasmitam Mahamarakatashyamam. So Shyama, his complexion is like Marakata Mani. Is very bluish in color. Shrimad Vadana Pankajam, and that boy's beautiful face is like lotus. Vadana is face. Pankajam means lotus. Then Kambhugrivam Mahoraskam Sunasam Sundarabhruvam. He has beautiful nose, he has beautiful eyes, he has beautiful face. So, and he is surrounded, his face is surrounded with beautiful locks of hair. Padmagarbharunapangam Hridya Hasavalokanam Svasaijat Valisambhigna Nimna Nabhidalodaram. So he has a lotus-like navel, and he is Padmagarbharunapangam, and his eyes are also like lotus petals. Hridya Hasavalokanam, and his hasa, his smile, avalokana, glance, are hridya, very heart-touching. So the child was so enchanting, and this Markandeya Rishi came there out of great curiosity and eagerness and enthusiasm to see that child. Markandeya Rishi, all the way he came to that child, little child, who was lying on that banyan leaf, and then on a small island on a banyan tree, and his throat also bore marks of lines of conchal. Then the lotus face was shining with the wealth of his beauty. So then, as Markandeya Rishi approached this infant baby, who was like bluish boy sucking his own toe, then as the infant held to one of his toes with his beautiful leaf-like delicate fingers, he was sucking the toe. Basically, that boy is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, in the form of an infant baby. So, Krishna was curious, just as Markandeya Rishi was curious to understand the functioning of the Maya of the Lord. Krishna was curious to understand, what is there in my lotus feet? All my devotees are so obsessed with a desire to render service to my lotus feet. So, what is so special about my lotus feet? They want to taste the nectar of service to my lotus feet. I also want to taste the glory of my lotus feet. But as a grown-up boy or a grown-up man, he cannot take his own feet and then put in his mouth. So, Krishna took the form of an infant baby. It is common for infant babies, sometimes they may pick up their legs also, put in their mouth also, and Krishna is just doing this pastime. That's a very very enchanting pastime, that Krishna is sucking his own toe, putting that feet in his mouth. So, this pastime was also remembered by Mother Devahuti when she was offering her prayers to Lord Kapila in the third canto, 33rd chapter. We discussed that at that time. So, Markandeya Rishi was ecstatic to see this boy. So, in the midst of nowhere, in the midst of this waters of inundation, where he is not finding any person around to discuss or to speak out, he found this boy. So, Markandeya Rishi with great eagerness went towards this boy. And when the child inhaled, Markandeya Rishi went into the belly of the child. So, he was a child, Markandeya Rishi just came forward and then he was inhaled into the body of this boy. And within the belly of that boy, of that infant child, Markandeya Rishi has seen the entire creation, entire universe manifested. Just as Mother Yashoda has seen the entire universe within Krishna's mouth, similarly Markandeya Rishi actually entered the belly of this boy, this infant baby Krishna, and then he has seen the entire universe there. And all the planetary systems, various moving and non-moving living entities and different kinds of planets and dwelling places and social divisions and elements and time and everything created in this material universe was visible within the belly of this boy. So, whatever we have seen in that creation chart where everything in the universe manifests from Mahavishnu's body, everything got revealed to Markandeya Rishi within the belly of this boy. And then Markandeya Rishi was totally bewildered, astonished. Then the infant then exhaled, and within the belly of the infant, Markandeya Rishi has seen his own hermitage also. Like that, everything in the universe he has seen. Just like Mother Yashoda has seen everything within the universe within Krishna's belly, and she has seen herself also and her child also. So, like that, Markandeya Rishi also has seen everything within the Lord's belly. And when the child exhaled, Markandeya Rishi again came back from the nostrils of that boy, and again he found himself into the waters of inundation. Again he went into the waters of inundation, and he again saw the banyan tree on a small island. And again the child glanced and smiled at him, and Markandeya Rishi again ran to embrace that child, and the child became invisible. So, according to acharyas, this happened for 7 times. Markandeya Rishi was inhaled into Krishna's body, and then he was exhaled, and he again went through this waters of inundation. So, like that, for 7 times it happened. So, then Markandeya Rishi again found himself back in his own hermitage after experiencing this waters of inundation. Then he understood, oh, this is how my Lord's Maya functions. It completely bewilders the living entities. So, like that, Lord can exhibit his Maya in front of his devotees in various ways to make them understand or fulfill their curiosity. So, the illusion disappeared finally, and Markandeya Rishi understood, oh, this is the extent of my Lord's potency. Then he continued to perform his devotional services and his austerities and meditation. So, that completes the 9th chapter.
we will enter the 10th chapter. In the 10th chapter, once Markandeya Rishi was absorbed in his meditation, so having experienced the bewildering potency of the Lord, Markandeya Rishi took the shelter of the Supreme Lord and he prayed to the Lord, "I take shelter of your lotus feet with that bestow all fearlessness." So then he started meditating. So as Markandeya Rishi was absorbed in his meditation, once Mother Parvati and Lord Shiva saw Markandeya Rishi. So they were going along with their companions. Shiva and Parvati were going on their bull carrier Nandi, and then they noticed Markandeya Rishi absorbed in meditation. Then Mother Parvati thought, Goddess Uma, he thought that the body and mind and senses of the sage were totally absorbed in meditation. So, "Oh Lord Shiva, you are so powerful. Why don't you go and give him perfection? So he is so absorbed in his meditation." Then Shiva went there. Shiva said that he has attained pure devotional service. He doesn't desire any other benedictions. He doesn't desire liberation also. Still, let us go and talk to him. So Shiva was thinking that Markandeya Rishi is a great devotee of the Lord. So if I go and meet him, that will be beneficial for me in his association. Because he is a great devotee, taking the association of a devotee is very beneficial for me. So Shiva went to Markandeya Rishi in that mood. So then he approached Markandeya Rishi, and Markandeya Rishi was in trance. Shiva was not offended. Sometimes we have seen in Srimad Bhagavatam also, sometimes somebody is absorbed in trance, in meditation, in samadhi, some guest comes to meet this person, and because he doesn't respond, the guest becomes little angry. But Shiva did not become angry. Shiva understood what Markandeya Rishi has been doing. So Shiva, because he is a very powerful personality, he entered into the heart of Markandeya Rishi. He entered into the meditation of Markandeya Rishi and then woke him up from that meditation. And within the meditation of Markandeya Rishi, Shiva was able to interact with him. Then Markandeya Rishi came out of trance and he saw Lord Shiva suddenly appearing in front of him. Then Shiva is looking so brilliant. So he had golden hair that resembles lightning. He had 3 eyes. He had 10 arms. He has a tall body. And he had tiger skin. And he was holding a trident and a bow and arrows and sword and shield. He had prayer beads also. Then Dhamaruka also. And he was holding a sword and shield also. So like that Shiva appeared in a very gorgeous form in front of Markandeya Rishi. And seeing Shiva and Parvati also, Markandeya Rishi offered obeisances to Lord Shiva. So he started praising Lord Shiva. "Oh Shiva, you are fully satisfied, and by your mercy you satisfy the entire world, and you are the best of all Vaishnavas. Please tell me, what can I do for you? How can I serve you? You are transcendental to material modes, but you give pleasure to people through mode of goodness." So being satisfied by Markandeya Rishi's praise, Lord Shiva started speaking. Lord Shiva first glorified Brahmanas. In the 20th and 21st shlokas, Lord Shiva praised the Brahmanas. So first Shiva said, "My dear Markandeya Rishi, I am very pleased with your austerities and devotion and meditation and all your spiritual practices. So please ask any benediction that you want. Because when you meet me, or when you meet any of three of us, Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva, so meeting with any of three of us should not go in vain. So please ask any benediction." And Brahmanas are so glorious. Then he started glorifying the Brahmanas. We'll recite the shlokas. Brahmanah sadhavah shanta nissanga bhutavatsalah ekanta bhakta asmasu nirvairah samadarshanah. Brahmanah sadhavah shantah. Brahmanas are sadhus. They are good at their spiritual practices. They are very saintly in their character. Sadhavah shantah. They are very peaceful. And nissanga, they have no attachments. They have no material attachments. Bhutavatsalaha, they are very compassionate and merciful towards common people and other living entities. And ekanta bhakta asmasu, they are also devoted to the Supreme Lord. Ekanta bhakta, they have one-pointed devotion to the Supreme Lord. Then nirvairaha samadarshanaha. Nirvairaha means they are not envious of anyone. They don't consider anyone as their enemies. And samadarshinaha, they have this great quality of equanimity. Next. సలోకాలోకపాలాస్తాన్ సలోకాలోకపాలాస్తాన్ వందంతి అర్చంతి ఉపాసతే అహం చ భగవాన్ బ్రహ్మ స్వయం చ హరిరీశ్వరః. వెరీ ఇంట్రెస్టింగ్లీ గాడ్ శివ సేస్ దట్ అహం చ భగవాన్ బ్రహ్మ స్వయం చ హరిరీశ్వరః, మైసెల్ఫ్ లార్డ్ బ్రహ్మ అండ్ ఈవెన్ ద సుప్రీం లార్డ్ పర్సనల్లీ వుడ్ వర్షిప్ అండ్ రెస్పెక్ట్ సచ్ బ్రాహ్మణస్ హు ఆర్ ఎండోర్డ్ విత్ ఆల్ దీస్ క్వాలిటీస్. స లోకా లోకపాలాశ్చ ఆల్ ద రెసిడెంట్స్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ ప్లానెట్స్ అలాంగ్ విత్ దేర్ రూలర్స్ ద డెమిగాడ్స్ వందంతి అర్చంతి ఉపాసతే. వందంతి మీన్స్ ది బౌడౌన్, దే ఆఫర్ ఒబేసెన్సెస్. అర్చంతి దే వర్షిప్, ఉపాసతే దే వర్షిప్ ది గ్లోరియస్ బ్రాహ్మణస్. సో బ్రాహ్మణస్ ఆర్ వెరీ వర్షిపబుల్. లార్డ్ శివ ఇస్ సేయింగ్ లైక్ దిస్ టు మార్కండే రిషి. దెన్ దెన్ శివ ఫర్దర్ డిస్క్రైబ్స్ ద గ్లోరీస్ ఆఫ్ బ్రాహ్మణాస్ అండ్ హౌ బ్రాహ్మణాస్ సస్టైన్ ద త్రీ వేదాస్ విచ్ ఆర్ నాట్ డిఫరెంట్ ఫ్రమ్ ద త్రీ గుణావతారస్ అండ్ హౌ దే వర్షిప్ ద లార్డ్ త్రూ ఆస్టెరిటీస్ అండ్ వేదిక్ స్టడీ అండ్ ఫాలోయింగ్ వేరియస్ రెగ్యులేటివ్ ప్రిన్సిపల్స్. సో ఇన్ దిస్ వే లార్డ్ శివ గ్లోరిఫైస్ మార్కండే రిషి ఇన్ వేరియస్ వేస్ అండ్ మార్కండే రిషి సేస్ దట్ మై డియర్ శివ, యు ఆర్ గ్లోరిఫైయింగ్ బ్రాహ్మణస్ ఇన్ జనరల్. మార్కండే రిషి డిడ్ నాట్ టేక్ ఆల్ దిస్ గ్లోరిఫికేషన్ టువర్డ్స్ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్, ఈస్ వెరీ హంబుల్. సో హీ సేస్ దట్ ఇన్ జనరల్ యూ హ్యావ్ గ్లోరిఫైడ్ బ్రాహ్మణస్. హీరింగ్ ఫ్రమ్ యువర్ మౌత్ ద క్వాలిటీస్ ఆఫ్ బ్రాహ్మణస్ ఈస్ గ్రేట్ ఫార్చ్యూన్ ఫర్ మీ. సో ఇట్స్ నెక్టర్ దట్ వ్యాంక్విష్డ్ ఆల్ ఎగ్జాషన్ ఆఫ్ మై ఆస్టెరిటీస్. సో దెన్ సచ్ హంబుల్ పర్సనాలిటీస్ లైక్ యూ దే ప్రైజ్ బ్రాహ్మణస్ అండ్ అవుట్ ఆఫ్ దేర్ హ్యూమిలిటీ, బట్ యు ఆర్ ఎగ్జిబిటింగ్ యువర్ హ్యూమిలిటీ, బట్ దట్ ఎగ్జిబిషన్ ఆఫ్ యువర్ హ్యూమిలిటీ డస్ నాట్ డిమినిష్ యువర్ పవర్ జస్ట్ బికాస్ యూ టేక్ ఎ హంబుల్ పొజిషన్ అండ్ దెన్ కన్సిడర్ అదర్ పర్సన్ ఎగ్జాల్టెడ్. దట్ డజన్ డిమినిష్ యువర్ పొటెన్సీ. యువర్ హ్యూమిలిటీ అండ్ యువర్ మోడెస్టీ ఈస్ బీయింగ్ రివీల్డ్ బై దిస్ డిస్క్రిప్షన్స్ దట్ యు ఆర్ గివింగ్. సో ఐ ఆఫర్ మై ఒబేసెన్సెస్ అంటూ యూ ఓ లార్డ్ శివ. సో యూ ఆస్క్డ్ మీ టు టేక్ ఎ బెనిడిక్షన్ ఫ్రమ్ యూ, ఐ హ్యావ్ వన్ డిజైర్. హి సేస్ వరం ఏకం వృణేథాపి పూర్ణాత్ కామాభివర్షణాత్ భగవత్యచ్యుతాం భక్తిం తత్పరేషు తథాత్వయే. వరం ఏకం వృణేథాపి, ఆల్దో ఐఎమ్ వెరీ సాటిస్ఫైడ్ ఆఫ్టర్ సీయింగ్ యూ, వెన్ ఐ హ్యావ్ యువర్ దర్శన్, యువర్ వైష్ణవానాం యథాశంభు, యు ఆర్ ద బెస్ట్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ వైష్ణవాస్. వెన్ సమ్మన్ సీస్ ద దర్శన్ ఆఫ్ లార్డ్ శివ, వాట్ ఎల్స్ దే వాంట్? I don't want anything else, but still, because you asked me to take a benediction from you, I'm asking this. What is that? Varam ekam vrinethapi, one desire I have, purnat kama bhivarshanat. Because you can bestow benediction, I'm asking this from you. Bhagavati achyutam bhaktim tat pareshu tathatvayi. So Bhagavati achyuta means the Supreme Lord, Achyuta, who is Bhagavan, endowed with all six opulences. Bhaktim. May I have devotion unto the Supreme Lord Achyuta. Not only devotion unto the Lord, tat pareshu tathatvayi, I should also be devoted to the devotees of the Supreme Lord. So may I have bhakti unto Bhagavan and bhaktas. So both, that's the desire that Markandeya Rishi wanted from Lord Shiva. So thus being glorified and worshipped by the sage Markandeya, Lord Shiva continued to glorify the qualities of this great sage, and he replied to this great sage as follows. My dear Markandeya Rishi, you have absolutely no material desires. When I asked you to take anything, you have asked only for pure devotion unto the Supreme Lord and his devotees, because Shiva is worshipped by so many materialistic people and they ask so many material benedictions from Shiva. We have seen in the 10th canto, Vrikasura wanted a benediction from Shiva. What is that benediction? Vrikasura wanted to put his head on someone's head, put his hand on someone's head, then the person should die. So these are the kinds of benedictions that Shiva is obliged to bestow upon his worshippers. Then Shiva was obliged to Banasura, who fought with Krishna directly. So like that, Shiva is worshipped by so many materialistic people and demoniac people. But here Markandeya Rishi was absorbed in his own meditation on the Supreme Lord. And because of that, Shiva personally came to bestow his benediction upon Markandeya Rishi. On the other hand, in the 4th canto, 24th chapter, we have seen that Prachetas were about to worship Lord Vasudeva.
Then Shiva personally came there to guide them in their worship. He says, Yah param brahmasa sakshat triguna jiva sangitat bhagavantam vasudevam prapannah sapriyo hime. Yah param brahmasa sakshat means one who is completely devoted to Lord Vasudeva is very dear to Lord Shiva. So Shiva holds the devotees of Lord Vasudeva more dear to his heart than his own personal devotees. So now we have seen how Shiva has been very kind to Prachetas. He voluntarily came to guide them, and now Shiva voluntarily came to bestow his benediction upon Markandeya Rishi also, because Markandeya Rishi was a devotee of Lord Achyuta, the Supreme Lord Krishna. So he says that Markandeya Rishi was bestowed this benediction by Shiva. Shiva said that all your desires will be fulfilled. You enjoy pious fame. You will be freed from old age. You will live until the end of this creation cycle. Only 7 manvantaras passed. There are many manvantaras. So Markandeya Rishi can continue to live up to that point. You will have knowledge of past, present and future. You will have transcendental realization of the Supreme Lord. And you will also attain the post of this guru of all Puranas. Then after saying this, Lord Shiva departed from this place and describing Markandeya Rishi's glories. Then similarly, Markandeya Rishi is glorious for perfection in mystic yoga. Even today also he is living, and then he is traveling all over the world, absorbed in his meditation on the Supreme Lord Krishna. So in this way, Suta Goswami narrated the activities of Markandeya Rishi, a great devotee to all the sages of Namisharanya. One who hears this narration properly and narrates this pastimes of Markandeya Rishi also to others, such people will not undergo any material existence. This is the Phalashruti given by Suta Goswami at the end of this 11th chapter, 10th chapter. So we have completed the description of Markandeya Rishi. So in today's episode, we have seen the Vedic division done by Vyasadev and his disciples and grand disciples. One Veda is divided into 4, and those 4 Vedas are divided into some smaller sections, and then they are propagated through Vyasadeva's disciples and grand disciples. We have seen all that. And after that, we have seen the story of Markandeya Rishi, how he was not distracted by Cupid and all the apsaras, and how Markandeya Rishi was blessed by Naranarayan Rishis. We have seen Markandeya Rishi's prayers into Naranarayan Rishi, and we have seen Markandeya Rishi's experience of going through the waters of inundation. And also we have seen how Lord Shiva bestowed his benediction upon Markandeya Rishi. So tomorrow we will have the last episode of the Bhagavata Pravaha series, and in that episode we will conclude Srimad Bhagavatam with the last 3 chapters. So thank you all very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya, Srila Prabhupada ki jaya. Hare Krishna.